Chapter 7 Horace Clout cradled the sharp-smelling ale in his thick hands while waiting for his noble contact to arrive at the prestigious Gentlemen's Club in Southgate, the Tewbury. His attaché, Melchor Raines, wandered nondescriptly about to see if he could pick up any interesting gossip of note. The clubs were pure excess, and Horace despised the languorous revelry and the stink of tobacco, but he could at least avail himself of the finest food he had ever eaten. Not even the Queen's table matched the delicacies of the Tewbury. Whenever he visited Bittermarch, he made it a point to take at least one meal in the club, despite the noxious film of idleness that splashed on him as alcohol and gambling turned grown men into adolescents. The remains of the sage-rubbed beef rib and spiced potato, his second helping, awaited a servant to come collect them and lay out a wide sampling of cakes, pies and pastries in their place. For all his efforts, he could never get blackberries to grow in the harsher climate of Cretus, and the blackberry tart of Tewbury simply could not be passed over. Best of all, as a visiting dignitary from a foreign nation, he ate on the Queen's farthing. Hence he ate often, and he ate well. He was glad he would winter in the rival nation, even if it was filled with idiots. His Bittermarchian co-conspirator arrived soon after dessert, but turned down Horace's attempts to share the sweet wealth spread out before him. Something about the Duke before him seemed different from the others he had met. Nobility believed in its own superiority, but this Duke exuded it. The iron-cold eyes, the bottom of the chin at perfect parallel with the ground, the air of dignity, soberness, and propriety. He possessed them all. The ambassador wondered whether the outward nuances, no doubt ingrained through strict tutelage, engendered the self-importance, or whether the self-importance engendered the nuances. The cinnamon bun distracted him from these thoughts for a moment as he closed his eyes and savoured a mouthful under the blank expression of his noble contact. "I see you are enjoying the food as always, Ambassador," the Duke noted evenly. "We should keep this short so we don't draw any attention." Horace nodded and licked the frosting from his fingers. "If I could have a house in the hills and a plate of these every day, I would give up this complicated, dangerous business." "Of course," Horace glanced around to ensure they were alone in the small gallery in which he ate. "The atrocity we concocted seems not to have sparked any reaction in the Queen whatsoever. She barely seemed concerned. The House of Light and the House of Lords showed a tad more interest. What is your sense of how the matter stands?" The Duke lowered his voice. "You must understand that most nobles are completely unsympathetic to your nation. Anger over the purge of Joris and his followers, of whom we are all descendants, runs deep in our blood. An accusation and a few witnesses will not be enough, I fear. You will need to escalate matters further." Horace knew this. "As is the plan. With any luck, the eyewitnesses and the corpses will arrive before long. We will use them to keep the atrocity in plain view while we wait for winter to end. Summer will bring more surprises. Don't fear. Once we play all of our cards, the people of Cretus will demand war, and yours will demand the same. We'll get a little stretch of land in the south. You'll be the hero who steps in to fill the void we will create in your government. My people get fed, your people get a proper ruler." The Duke appeared thoughtful. "Have you heard from your contacts here? Are there shipments and bribes in place?"
"Oh, yes," Horace informed him. "Rest assured that you will have the military might to quell anyone who might oppose you. Everything is where we discussed. You will simply need to provide hands for the weapons. They will be more than enough to make any of your domestic enemies think twice, and will convince our people and soldiers to be content with the small allotment we will hold in the south. Just be sure not to step in too early, will you?"
The Duke stood. "I will come as soon as men loyal to me occupy Belshire. I will not speak with you again until summer. Good day." His eyes shot disdainfully down to Horace's shirt before he left, and the ambassador looked down to find a variety of stains colouring his outfit. He had forgotten the napkin in his haste to eat. Horace would enjoy stabbing the greedy Duke in the back. He would practice the Duke's disdainful look so he could stare down at the bloodstain as if disgusted that the Duke would let such a thing bloom on his finely tailored shirt. An ale later, Melchor returned from his reconnaissance and sat down. His deadly eyes regarded the platter of desserts that the ambassador had decimated single-handedly. As always, the assassin's demeanour was cold and serious when speaking with his superior. Horace fought down a powerful belch that threatened to escape.
"Any news, Melkor?" he asked.
Melkor relaxed, grabbing the decanter of wine and pouring himself a drink.
"Not much to report, I'm afraid. The massacre is hardly a topic of conversation. The dead women and children will be needed to shock them out of their complacency. When do they arrive?"
"Any day now, I expect," Horace explained, "weather permitting. It's certainly milder here than it is in Cretus this time of year."
Melkor sipped his wine in a controlled fashion, and Horace wondered if the spy's moderation was a backhanded critique of his enthusiastic gluttony.
"Is our noble friend still happy and clueless?" Melkor asked.
Horace again checked his environs for any unwanted listeners.
"Quite. A fine man, I'm sure, but so infected with dreams of grandeur that I doubt he'll have one clue as to our true intentions until he starts bleeding. It will be a glorious day for Cretus."
Melkor did not respond, drinking absent-mindedly. Horace imagined death and mayhem always ran through Melkor's mind, whether he were acting serious or playing the part of the silly courtier. Where did Parliament find such men? What kind of person wanted to live a life filled with acts of murder, torture, and intrigue, and not just live it, but thrive upon it? Some people, Horace reckoned, were born lacking a certain capability of human feeling, or even the ability to imagine it.
"Have you made any headway finding the Queen's will?" Horace asked. "This whole plan hinges on the monarch and her intended successor meeting their fates simultaneously."
Melkor regarded him coldly, perhaps sensing a criticism of his lack of progress.
"I am relatively certain of where it is, but it will be difficult to reach. I am making progress."
"Good,"
Horace said, scooping up the purple innards of a tart that had dribbled on the table.
"Keep me informed. Let's leave before they get drunk and loud."
Melkor leaned back in his chair.
"I'll stay for a time. It's when they get drunk and loud that all the good bits come out."